There are big events in golf, and then there is the Ryder Cup. With the appropriate fanfare leading us in, folks, you will hear that music often, from the opening shot on Friday morning to the final putt late on Sunday afternoon at Bethpage Black on NBC Sports, USA Network, and Peacock. Welcome to a special 45th Ryder Cup edition of Musings on Golf. I am Kelly Elbin. Our executive producer is Jenna Self, and together we join all golf fans in counting down final days, the final hours, until the 12-man team from Europe takes on the 12-man squad from the United States in pursuit of that small golden chalice that has come to represent the most riveting event in golf by far, and one of the great spectacles in all of sports. In a little bit, you're going to hear from PGA of America professional David Young, whose son and student, Cameron, is representing the United States for the first time in this, the 45th Ryder Cup. You're going to hear from both captains, Luke Donald from the European side and Keegan Bradley from the American side. They're going to offer insights, reflections, thoughts. I'll offer a few of my own and give you a prediction later on after the interview with David Young, which I really enjoyed having him on. He's a good man, 22 years at Sleepy Hollow Country Club in New York. And he and Cameron are kindred souls in a lot of ways. All right, a couple things before we kind of get to the heart of this show. And this is breaking news in that the opening ceremony for this Ryder Cup has been moved up one day. It was scheduled for Thursday afternoon on Long Island. But because of inclement weather that is in the forecast, it's been moved to Wednesday, tomorrow. So as we record this on Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd of September, that means tomorrow, Wednesday, is when the big gala pre-show begins at 3 p.m. Ryder Cup ticket holders, by the way, for Thursday will now be admitted both Wednesday and Thursday. And probably most important is that the pairings that typically are announced by the two captains at the opening ceremony will be held until 4 o'clock on Thursday at a location to be determined. So it'll be a lot of fun, a lot of fanfare, if you will, for the opening ceremonies on Wednesday now. But the nuts and bolts of everything will begin with the announcement by Keegan and Luke on Thursday afternoon. Second thing, and I strongly implore you, if you haven't seen it already, to Google, watch the 7-minute video that the PGA of America put out yesterday based on a really emotional scene that Captain Keegan Bradley put together on the first tee Monday morning for the U.S. Team. And let me tell you something. If there was ever any question that Keegan Bradley was a good pick to be Ryder Cup captain, and if there was ever any doubt about his decision to not select himself to play, you watch that video and you understand this guy has really, I think, morphed into a leader of men. And that's kind of what a coach has to do. Yeah, that's what a coach of a football team does over the course of a season. Keegan has done this kind of bit by bit, week by week, and leading up to the Ryder Cup. It's being played in New York, where he went to school. He may be a New Englander, but he's got a big part of New York in him. And when you watch this video, from a strictly an American standpoint, it's incredibly moving. And it tells me that Keegan is giving his squad every opportunity to be prepared to face what I think is the strongest European that's ever been assembled, quite honestly. And they showed it 2 years ago outside of Rome when they really dominated from the start and won the Ryder Cup easily. So watch that, please. And so much so that let's hear what Keegan had to say about that special time, Monday morning, nobody in the stands, first tee, just his team, some others close to the team. See what the captain had to say.
It was a powerful moment. That was a really fun time to be out there with those guys and share that moment and hear the national anthem, be out there and see it and see how emotional the guys got. A lot of people have worked really hard to get to this point in their lives. You never know when your last Ryder Cup is. You never know if you're going to play one or 10 or whatever. For a lot of guys, whether it was the players, the caddies, the coaches, to be on that first tee in New York City at Bethpage Black at a Ryder Cup is a very powerful moment. And, you know, sometimes in your life and in your career, you have to take stock in what's happening around you. And, you know, for that moment out this morning, guys were really taking that in and enjoying it. And that was a beautiful thing.
It was a beautiful thing. Chris Mescali, a New York firefighter, whose father, Joe, passed away in heroic fashion on September 11, 2001, spoke to the team. And he had his son there, Joey. And the words just from Chris Mescali and how he tried to correlate, if you will, a team in a firehouse and a team going in to fight a fire with the team that Keegan's assembled. It tells me a lot, and I'll get to my thoughts in terms of who's going to win this later on. And as I said, Captain Donald is bringing in a very powerful group on his own, but the New York crowd is going to be a major factor here. And more on that later. I'm really glad that I was able to speak to David Young. David, as I mentioned, horrific golf professional, guy who teaches the game. He's now retired after 22 years at Sleepy Hollow Country Club, teaches the game, grows the game, cares deeply about the game. And I know for him, being a member of the PGA of America, the organization that runs the Ryder Cup, it's extremely special to have his son for the first time representing the United States in his home state of New York. As I mentioned earlier as well, I've found Cameron Young to be kind of a quiet guy, very modest. You can see that. He's an only child, brought up extremely well by his parents. He's very much a reflection of his dad. I think going to be a really special 3 days on the golf course for Cameron. He's playing well, and the United States is going to need him. And I hope you enjoy this interview with PGA of America professional David Young. And afterwards, we're going to hear from Luke Donald, the captain of the European Ryder Cup team. And I've got some general thoughts and a little bit of history on the Ryder Cup. And you'll hear that interview with PGA of America professional David Young right after this from our friends at William & Harry and Titleist. America, this is your moment. William & Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here to honor the Ryder Cup so every fan can feel like part of Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. Two head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% water-resistant with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Just so you know, there's a limited run on these shoes, so don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit, get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with your wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
Well, the father-son connections among the 2025 U.S. Ryder Cup team run deep, with three PGA of America professionals beaming with pride this week as their boys don the red, white, and blue to take on a strong European side in the 45th Ryder Cup. And we are honored to have one of those proud papas with us today. For 22 years, he was the PGA head professional at Sleepy Hollow Country Club in Briarcliff Manor, New York, where he taught his son Cameron the game they both dearly love. What a thrill to welcome David Young, also Cameron Young's instructor, to Musings on Golf. David Young, what a week this is for you and your family, huh?
Yeah, it's been fun. It's going to be a lot more fun once the competition gets started. They're really excited to be here, you know, back in our old stomping grounds, you know, for such a big occasion.
Well, it is. And can you see your son representing the United States in the Ryder Cup? What are your feelings? What's going through your head? You've got, I would think, a fair amount as dad, and teacher. You've been really Cameron's lone teacher throughout his career. What's going through your head? What's going through your heart as you prepare, you get ready for what's easily the biggest golf event of 2025?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to describe. There's a lot of emotions at once. Like you said, kind of a dual role as dad. You're beaming with pride that your son has risen to this level and has the opportunity to play with such great players in an event like the Ryder Cup, to represent the United States of America, and New York too, where his roots are. And as coach, it's such a satisfaction that he's gotten this far. A lot of excitement about what can be the rest of this week. But you're sort of beating yourself up, making sure you're taking everything in and making sure that he's ready to go.
And I mentioned the two other PGA professionals, Mark Bradley, who is Keegan Bradley's father, is a PGA of America professional, and Mike Thomas, Justin's dad, also a PGA of America professional. I know that Mike has worked with Justin closely over the years. Give me a little bit of sense as well for you, when both you and your son learned that he had made 12-man United States Ryder Cup team, when Keegan picked him, what were that emotions like for you, and what were they like for your son?
Yeah, I think for him, I guess for both of us, somewhat a sense of relief, especially after 23 when he was ninth on the point list and didn't get the nod. And this time he was 14th on the point list. We had a sense that, he'd been playing very well, so we had a sense that he was in the running. I know early in the week at the Tour Championship, Keegan stopped over and kind of whispered something in Cameron's ear on the driving range while he was warming up before one of the practice rounds. And I was hoping he'd told Cameron he'd made the team after playing so well for the last 3 weeks. But I think all he said was, "You got one more in you, kid." So Cam was, I got to play one more good week here. And he did play well at the Tour Championship. So we got a feeling that that was going to be good enough. But until you get that call, there's some trepidations and really a sense of relief when he did get the call. He got the call, a little before we picked him up at the airport on his way back from Tour Championship. And by the time we get out of the car to pick him up, he knew and told my wife and I there at the airport. So there were a few tears and a lot of congratulations and large sigh of relief.
And I have to imagine the tears were not just one-sided. They had to be some really cool emotions for you and your wife, some wonderful feelings.
Yeah, and Cam, big grin on his face when he was, could tell before he even said anything that it was good news. So, it was nice to see him, so thrilled about it. Barb had some tears, and I had a few on my own.
Hey, how old was Cameron when he started playing? I know you've really been his only teacher throughout the years, but give a little snapshot, if you would, David, of how Cameron got started and kind of when you maybe began to know that, boy, my kid could really be good.
Yeah, my wife is a good player and she likes to play. So, even when he was a baby, we liked to go out and play in the evening. So we'd bring him with us. By the time he was two, he could, putter, chip a little bit, bang the ball around. And I'd say by the time he was three, he could stand there and hit a whole pile of balls. He'd get mad when his hands got too sore to keep going. So, and then he probably played, I think he played his first hole ever when he was about four. So, he's been around it by default, got a very early start. Went through a few years there where he didn't really care about it. But then by the time he was seven or eight, he was, by then I was at Sleepy Hollow with their other kids to play with and take part in the junior clinic. So that's when he sort of got excited about going to the golf course more and starting to practice a little bit and playing with the other kids.
Playing some local junior events as well as American Junior Golf Association tournaments?
He did. I think his first tournament ever was a U.S. kids event. We say it's good, 2006, I think, so he would have been nine. We went over to Wingfoot to the U.S. Open in the morning. It might have been 2007, whatever year the Wingfoot was at Wingfoot. We went over to watch a little bit of the U.S. Open in the morning on a Thursday and drove him across the river to play his first U.S. kids event ever.
One of the things I've noticed about your son, he's always seems to me to be very somewhat pragmatic, very level-headed. Is that Is that his very nature? And has that would seem, David, with coming so close so many times, seven runner-up finishes before he won the Wyndham Championship. Did that sort of level head, if I'm correct, did that serve him well throughout that whole process, if you will?
It did. You know, he's an only child. He's been around adults quite a bit. He grew up at Sleepy, you know, around members. And, you know, so he's always been a little bit of an old soul and a little bit, as you said, you know, he's thoughtful and, you know, very level-headed. So it helped. I mean, all those runner-ups, at the end of the day, you realize you played really well.
Yeah.
You know, there weren't any of those where he played poorly, really. I think his, you know, I think it's been established, his stroke average in those final rounds and all those runner-ups, it was sub-68. I mean, so it's not like he went out there and lost tournaments. You know, most of them, somebody came out and played awfully well to beat him. You know, so I think that helped him, his level-headedness, his practical way of looking at things, realizing that, you know, there's nothing bad about those second-place finishes other than we'd have loved to have a win, but realizing that, you know, if he keeps putting himself in that position, which he had on a regular basis, that the wins would come and that he really wasn't, you know, he knew he had it in him to win. You know, he'd won at every level, played well enough to win on a number of those occasions, and just didn't. You know, so it never dawned on him that, man, maybe I'm not good enough to win out here. He always knew that he was. So I think in that way, you know, as you said, that mindset helped him, you know, rationalize that his play was good enough to win and that would happen at some point.
Yeah, and to your point, the most, I guess, noticeable runner-up finish was the Open Championship when the other Cam Smith, just simply played, David, a little bit better than your son. But your son played really well at the Old Course, that all four of those days, and in particular the final round.
Yeah, Cam tells the story a lot of times that, you know, one of the interviews after one of his second places, you know, I think he'd shot, you know, 33 or 34 in the back nine and lost by one or two. And he said, one of these days I'm going to shoot 31 and you'll all win. And a few weeks later at the Open Championship, he shot 31 and Cam Smith shot 30. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, it's called golf, isn't it, Mr. Young?
That's it.
So pleased to be speaking with PGA of America professional David Young, whose son and student Cameron Young is representing the United States of America this week in the Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black. And David, speaking of Bethpage Black, Cameron shot 64 in 2017 to win the New York State Open. I believe he became the first amateur to win the New York State Open, if I'm correct on that. I may not be. So he knows the golf course. In fact, that was the course record at that time until I think Brooks Koepka eclipsed it by a shot. Why does he play that particular course so well? And maybe can you also, David, on a larger scale, give a sense of what makes the Black course so challenging that it has that warning sign on the front? So kind of a two-part question.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a big golf course. You know, it's a long walk. It's the, you know, the holes are big. It covers a lot of ground. It's got a very rugged nature to it. And I think that's what appeals to Cam. It's, you know, it requires a lot of shots that feel kind of heroic.
Mm.
So, you know, a lot of shots are just a lot of fun for good players to play and not so much fun for the average player. You know, just a lot of big carries, you know, some of the holes just to get it to the fairway or to clear a cross bunker, you know, require a shot that most of us aren't capable of hitting. You know, I think that's where that sign comes from. That's where the feeling comes from. I think that's what he likes about it. Just, you know, it's a big boy golf course and you got to hit some big boy shots, you know, and they're all very challenging. So, but they're all very straightforward. There's nothing sneaky or, you know, no hidden tricks out there. It's all right there in front of you, but you just have to hit a lot of really good big shots.
I liked what Captain Bradley did in getting 10 of the guys together at the Pro Core Championship out in Northern California to sort of build some team bonding. Did you have any feedback from Cameron in terms of what that week meant? Everybody made the cut, which I thought was great. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler won, but that looked like the beginning of forming a nice team.
Yeah, they got to spend some time with each other off the golf course. Got to spend some time with each other on the golf course. You know, so I think that was a good week. He said he really enjoyed being around some of the guys, and you know, he spent a lot of time with Xander, who didn't get to go, but Cam spent a lot of time with him on the TGL New York team.
Uh-huh.
You know, so he has spent a little bit of time with Bryson in the past, but for the other nine guys that were there. Some of those guys didn't get to hang out with a whole lot. So it was really fun for him to get to see some of the guys that don't live here in Central Florida, or Southern Florida. So it sounded like, what Keegan did there worked. And at least for Cam, he's more comfortable around some of those guys. So I think it was a good idea, and I think it worked. And it sounds like they had a good time. And like I said, they all made the cut. So then the things are looking good for Team USA.
After Cameron won the Wyndham Championship, I was watching an interview he had on Golf Channel. He said, look, I'm a better golfer now than maybe I was a year ago, 2 years ago. And he also said better mentally. David, in terms of that mental approach, is that something that the two of you discuss in terms of getting in the right mindset to be consistently good week after week on tour?
Yeah, I'm not the best at that. I had a pretty good temper back when I played. If I knew Napa, if I knew that what I know now, back when I could hit the ball pretty well, it would have been nice. But he's better at me than that. He's had some help other than me. He's definitely gotten better on that end of the deal. I think Kyle had a lot to do with that too. So his new zaddy, it was one of his best friends, and he'd keep Cam in a pretty good mood out there, which, sort of brings his temperature down a little bit. He's also had some good help mentally. So he's definitely moved in the right direction that way. And I think, a little bit kind of funny. I think I mentioned this was back in probably about the time he got Kyle in the bag, maybe even before, and I said, this seems like you're happier out there these days. And he said, you know what I figured out? When I get mad, it costs me money. So the less I get mad, the more money I make. So that might have been a helpful revelation on his part.
And the money could be quite significant out there, can it not?
Boy, these days, yeah, he got in at the right time. I'll tell you.
David, I read where you described whether playing rounds of golf with your son or practice sessions as quote easy. Is that just an easy kind of relationship, kind of two kindred spirits, if you will, in terms of the way you think and approach golf life, et cetera?
I think so. Yeah. We definitely, for good or bad on him, for him, we think a lot alike. We have a similar outlook on a lot of things and sort of behave similarly. But I think it's easy from that coaching. Some dads have trouble coaching their kids. For us, it's just always been that way. So we don't know anything different.
Yeah.
So I think just because we think a lot alike, it's easy to communicate. But I think the other thing that makes it easy is that, he's very coachable, when it comes to on the course, off the course. He's a bright kid. He understands things pretty quickly. He's a good athlete. He can make changes in his swing or in his game better than most. So that makes life as a coach very easy, life as a dad very easy, when he understands the points I'm trying to make and can enact those things, with ease, whether it's some things off the course or things on the golf course.
Cameron and I share some commonality in that both of our fathers, highly successful PGA of America professionals. My father, Max Elvin, was at Burning Tree Club for many, many years, past president of the PGA of America in the late 60s, yeah. And obviously your great run at Sleepy Hollow. And I'm one, I know Cameron represented the U.S. in the Junior Ryder Cup. From your standpoint, being a PGA of America professional and the Ryder Cup being run by the PGA of America, there has to be a sense of pride just in that part of the week as well.
Yeah, I mean, certainly for those of us that have sons here on the team that grew up, made our living as PGA professionals. I think I spent 17 years on the PGA of America's Rules Committee, who officiates this event. I never got to officiate a Ryder Cup. I did officiate a Junior Ryder Cup. Got to watch Cam play in the Junior Ryder Cup. So, yeah, there's that extra level of, your son playing in an organization that you take so much pride in and, it has meant so much to our family, growing up and in my career. It's that extra layer of, wanting to represent them well, wanting to play well for them, you know, but also the honor of playing in their biggest events, the PGA Championship, the Ryder Cup. You know, as a son of a PGA member and as a dad of a tour player who is a PGA member, it doesn't get much better.
I'm wondering, we're talking with David Young, Cameron Young's father, outstanding PGA golf professional here on Musings on Golf. When you get into this particular week, you've got team matches now all of a sudden, alternate shot, four ball, et cetera. Is that something where, how do you help your son with the strategies for alternate shot, for teaming up for, and do you offer any input to Keegan or any of the vice captains on the type of player who Keegan or who your son may play well with? How does that whole process work for a unique week like this?
Yeah, I'm just beginning to get into that. You know, I think they've got so much data and so many experts looking at every angle and every pairing and every stat. So I don't think there's much that I can tell them that they don't know. And as far as on the golf course, it comes down to hitting good shots. And, you know, I think strategically, you know, especially on this golf course, not a ton until it comes to maybe how aggressive you are, you know, some of the approach shots and putting. I think off the tee, you're just trying to get the ball in play, you know, in both formats. But short answer is no, I haven't had a whole lot of input with the coaches or assistant captains, but we're getting Cam ready with his swing and his mental state. So, you know, he'll be in good shape, and when it comes down to hitting the shots, he'll be able to do that.
David, I want to go back to something we talked about earlier and Cam saying that he simply is a better player now. Where, in your opinion, I guess in his as well, where is he improved? Where, how is he better? What particular part of his game now than maybe a year ago, a couple of years ago, et cetera?
Yeah, I think his swing is much more consistent. It's technically a little bit better. He just a little less extra motion in there, a little more repeatable. His putting stroke is more solid mechanically than it was a few years ago. You know, his chipping mechanics are really good. He's developed a better touch around the greens than he had when he first got out here. So I think incrementally, just every part of the game is just that much more technically sound. You know, and he, you know, at Wake, he was a full-time student, part-time golfer. You know, now he's a full-time golfer, full-time dad. But so he's put a lot of time. He's got to see the best in the world at their craft. You know, so he's picked up some things along the way. So I think definitely, you know, there's some stats that might not agree with that he's better at all those things, but I think he is. I think, you know, mechanically, the touch and feel wise, you know, he knows how far he's going now with the full swing. So, I think just incrementally better at every part of the game. And that's what, you know, that's sort of how we look at things. We don't necessarily, hey, this stat is bad, so we need to work on this. That stat's good, so we can kind of ease off of that. You know, we're just sort of always pecking away at all the parts of the game, just trying to get better at everything, regardless of what the statistics say are good or bad.
Hey, David, in terms of the time you spend with Cameron on the lesson tee, I know that you followed him when he won at Wyndham. Are you out with him every week? How often are you working with him, et cetera?
Yeah, you know, I traveled to almost every tournament this year. So tournament days, tournament weeks, I'm there, you know, almost all the time. I missed one or two events this year. At home, if he's home for a week, it might be only one or two days that I see him. Mm-hmm. Some weeks, not at all. So, we kind of agree that he does need a little bit of, you know, me time to just get out there and hit some balls and see what he's feeling and see, you know, experiment a little bit on his own without me there. We find that that's a good process every once in a while for him to have a little bit of time to maybe work on things a little bit by himself. And then he'll come back and say, hey, you know, I felt this. If I did that, it felt a little better. Does that make sense? And, you know, so he bounces it off of me. We talk about it a little bit. So, you know, it's a nice combination. I get to see him a lot on the road, which is about half the weeks of the year. And then when we're home once or twice, but he gets some time to himself and I get some time to myself. And, you know, and we talk about what he discovers on his own. And, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. But, you know, more often than not, it's pretty good.
I have to talk to you about Sleepy Hollow Country Club, arguably the coolest logo of any club in the country with the headless horseman. And but the history of the club I mean, dating back to 1911, you talk about the power brokers of the world at that time in terms of who started it, and then the some of the biggest design names of the architects who design, who built the golf courses. Can you talk a little bit about that, David?
Yeah, it's such a neat place. You know, it was originally a Vanderbilt property. Cornelius Vanderbilt built the clubhouse as a summer home for one of his granddaughters. They liked being in the city better and eventually gave it back to Cornelius or sold it back. Then he got together with Rockefeller, who bought some of the land around the club, and they formed the club. And you know, the list of founding members is phenomenal. It's, you know, the Astor, Harriman, Macy, Brown, Colgate, you know, you name it. Like you said, the power brokers of the day. You know, list of 30 or so of the biggest names in America back then.
Yeah.
You know, and they hired, you know, deep preeminent architect at the time, C.B. McDonald, to design the golf course. Seth Rayner worked as the engineer. You know, and then down the road, to have Gil Hance come in and do a nice renovation to bring a lot of that McDonald character back to it that may have been softened over the years. So some of the great names in American history, along with some of the great architects, and a phenomenal piece of property. You know, the Vanderbilts and Locke and Rockefellers were not bad at picking their real estate back then.
Exactly. What makes the golf course so good, so challenging at Sleepy Hollow?
You know, I think it's nice that, and for the most part, it's pretty generous off the tee. You know, so you can go ahead and take a cut at your tee shots and not worry about, there's not too many spots out there where you have to worry about losing a golf ball. But the architecture is so good that the angles into the greens matter. So, you know, you may find your ball, but it's just, if you're not in the right spot to approach the green from the right angle, it makes those shots a little bit tougher. You know, the greens are phenomenal. The you know, the undulations and now the speed, you know, John Haywood's our superintendent there now. The greens are phenomenal, both in condition and makeup. So, you know, it's just a good test from start to finish. All the clubs in your bag. Like, I use almost every club in my bag every time I go out there. You know, and it's fun. There's not much that's scary. You know, you're going to find your golf ball. You're going to have a second shot most of the time. But, you know, it is a strategic golf course, so you do have to think. So it's kind of fun on both ends.
Now, a couple of questions for David Young, PGA of America professional, whose son Cameron will be representing the U.S. this week at the 45th Ryder Cup. One of the cool days of the week is Thursday afternoon with the opening ceremonies when those flags go up and those anthems are played. I don't know if you've been to a Ryder Cup and seen and felt that. And then the first tee on Friday morning, obviously. But having your boy walk up there on stage and hearing that anthem, I have to imagine that's going to be, honestly, David, one of the highlights of your life.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's going to get to me. I remember Cam played on the Junior Ryder Cup team in 2014, so we were over Glen Eagles, you know, for that opening ceremony, you know, and they introduced the kids as well as the tour team. So we know a little bit of what it's going to be like, and I remember we wanted to get to that first tee for the first tee shot that year. So we got the first bus in the morning, got through the gates with the first wave of people, thinking we're going to run up there to the first tee and get, you know, this is 2 hours before daylight. You know, kids ran to the first tee as fast as they could and got there. And I think we were 50 yards down the fairway in about the seventh row. It was already that many people there. And then obviously waited around 2 hours for that first tee shot. So by the time that rolls around, you can imagine the atmosphere. And so we have seen that. We're looking forward to that again at Bethpage. I think it's going to be that.
This is your home state. This is, you know, these people. What do you expect this week from New Yorkers? What's the feel going to be? Is it going to be a unique situation even for the Ryder Cup?
I think so. I think, you know, I'm hoping they're loud and partisan, but civil, if that's possible. I think that's all our hope, is that they're loud and they support our team. But I hope they also represent the United States and in New York State well as a crowd, and don't get too over the line. We're hoping for a loud, vocal, partisan crowd, but you know, we're going to ask them to hopefully, you know, be respectful.
Absolutely. I like to close our podcast every time, David, asking a question about a dream foursome, you know, three individuals who would would round out a dream for some. And it's been fascinating over the last couple of years when Bob Bupka and I would ask that question and the varied responses. So let me throw it to you. Whether those individuals are living or deceased, who would be the three people you'd play golf with, David Young, and where would you kind of play that fun, magical round?
Wow. You know, golf has been a family game for us. You know, my dad got to introduce me, Barb's dad. My wife's dad introduced her. You know, neither one of them got to see Cam play, you know, this high level. So, you know, they might get Cam and me and maybe my dad and my mom's or my wife's dad. They'll get the two grandpas to play with their grandson to see what he's turned into. So, yeah, there's a lot of great players I love to play with, but I think we'd probably keep it to the family and just give the granddads a chance to play with their grandson and me. So,
love the answer. Where would you play? Would you go back to Sleepy Hollow?
Wow, I think we would. Yep, I think that's where we go. It's place has meant so much to me and my family that I can't imagine a better place to do it.
David, this meant a lot to us that you would take the time to join us. Obviously, wishing you, Cameron, and the U.S. team the very, very best this week at what will be a most special Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black on Long Island. Thanks for joining me on Musings on Golf. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's going to be a great week.
Golf fans, are you ready to wear your pride? William and Harry's limited edition Spirit Shoe is here just in time to celebrate the Ryder Cup and to help you feel like you're part of Team USA, cheering on every shot. Two bold designs, premium deerskin, spikeless traction, 100% waterproof, and all-day comfort from tee to green and beyond. Limited production. When they're gone, they're gone. Rebuy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort. Well, we thank David Young for joining us and obviously wish him and Cameron Young all the best over the 3 days of the Ryder Cup. Again, remember, Cameron Young, as was noted in the interview, shot 64 at the Black course, held the course record there. And that's always a benefit when you know a golf course and you've had great success on the golf course. That can only serve the U.S. team well. A few thoughts I'll have in just a minute, but I think it's important to hear first from Luke Donald to kind of set the stage from the European side. And Luke Donald was an absolute gem of a pick 2 years ago to be the European captain. They did a great job, and they really dominated from the start in the foursomes alternate shot format outside of Rome, and never the U.S. never was really in it. And now he's back. And let's hear what Luke has to say in regards to kind of the meaning of the Ryder Cup to Europe, and also what he acknowledges his group or his team is up against this week.
Yeah, I think it's always important to rally around something. You know, we always have things that we come up with that are important to us, and history and our unity and celebrating what we've done in the past and the legends that have kind of come before us is really important. So, yeah, I wanted to focus on that. Yes, this is going to be a difficult challenge. We haven't come close to winning three out of the last four away Ryder Cups. It's not been very close at all. That's my job to bridge that gap. But we have won quite a few times. We've won four times away since 1987. And, you know, come close a few other times as well. No, I think that's motivating to the guys that it can be done. It has been done. And, you know, again, we're here to try and do it again.
He's absolutely right. Having won those four times on American soil is a huge feather in the European cap. As a matter of fact, I was there the last time that the Europeans won on American soil, 2012. I was the director of communications for the PGA of America, and I moderated the press conferences that week. And I will tell you that when the Euros came from 4 points down
to win eight of the Sunday singles matches and have the other to win 14.5 and 13.5 and match what the U.S. did in winning in dramatic fashion at the Country Club in 1999. The look on the faces of the U.S. team first with Captain Davis Love III, and then the utter joy of Jose Maria Olazabal, the European captain at the time, and the players, and just the celebration, the champagne flying. It's an incredible feeling. Rory McIlroy said it, and he said this in the press conference after the Europeans won the Ryder Cup in 2023 outside of Rome. He said, one of the hardest, if not the hardest thing to do in golf is to win a road Ryder Cup. And he said, that's exactly what we're going to do at Bethpage Black. So the Europeans come in with a boatload of confidence. You have a lot of guys playing extremely well. And I have to tell you that's how the Ryder Cup typically works. If your best players are playing well, and Rory McIlroy, for example, is 16-13-4 in his Ryder Cup career. He's been on eight Ryder Cups to date. He's won five times. Psychologically, that's huge. Scottie Scheffler, on the other hand, this will only be his third Ryder Cup. He's 2-2-3. He was 0-2-2 in 2023. I guarantee you, Scottie Scheffler is an even better player today. He's a far better player today, and I can promise you he's going to do everything he can to make up for what was really a pretty poor time in Rome 2 years ago. The golf course itself, you know, it's interesting. If you watch some highlights from 4 years ago at Whistling Straits, the first hole was set up to allow players to drive the green, and Bryson DeChambeau and his singles match on Sunday just did that. And that was kind of everything the U.S. squad needed in a match that they, you know, they clearly had in hand, went on to win by 10 points. And there's a little bit of that with the opening tee shot at Bethpage Black. It's not a long hole necessarily, and you might see a lot of that. But frankly, I don't know that there's a particular advantage either way. Players at this level, these elite players, are so long to begin with. I don't know that you can just say, oh, the United States has the advantage in length because of this guy and this guy. No, I think they all hit the ball, with the exception of Russell Henley, who's a very short hitter. What is he? Russell averages 275, 280 off the tee. But otherwise, it'll be a bomber's attack, I think, from both sides. The one thing I will say for the United States, they cannot fall behind in the foursomes, the alternate shot, as they did in Rome 2 years ago. The Europeans swept the Friday morning sessions. They won all 4 points, and at the end of the day, it was 6.5 to 1.5, the Europeans. And as I said earlier, the United States really wasn't in the ballgame after that. The United States has chosen to go with that same format of alternate shots, or foursomes, as it's called, for the Ryder Cup for the first day. And we'll see how that turns out. You can look at all kinds of history as to whether that's the right format, the wrong format. But I will say this, I think Keegan is going to do, particularly with a lot of the analytics that he has, I think he'll do a much better job than Zach Johnson did 2 years ago. I didn't think Zach was a particularly effective captain. I think Keegan is very much on the other side of it. And I expect the U.S. to be in good shape, and certainly not in the deep in the well as they were 2 years ago after day one. As to who wins this, it's hard. You know, I've been lucky. I've attended and worked six Ryder Cups. I caddied for Lee Trevino in the Ryder Cup in 79. I was there at the Word by the Shore in 91 when I was with PGA Magazine. Both of those were wins. I also saw the Europeans win at Oak Hill in 95. I was there, as I mentioned, at Medina in 12. But I also saw the U.S. win at Valhalla under the pod system with Paul Azinger in 2008. And then I was there in 2014 when things got not icy, but downright frigid with Phil Mickelson and Tom Watson, Phil's comments that really led the PGA of America to reshape their the way that they've selected their captains. That was a tough loss. So my point on all this is,
I've been there and I've seen it, and I understand the emotions. And I was glad to hear, frankly, Bones McKay, when we had him on last week, he disagreed with me. And I've contended that the Europeans live for the Ryder Cup and the U.S. guys want to win it, but it may not be as important. And he said, no, I disagree with that. He said, they want to win it. They put a lot of pressure on themselves. And so I'll take him at his word. And I think the one thing I go back to, well, two things really, I'm going to take the U.S. to win this, by the way. The two things going back to this is the fact that, that what I saw on the, on that with Keegan and his leadership ability to rally the team. And maybe this isn't a fair comparison, but our country has been divided for quite some time. And it reminds me right now, and this is, I know this isn't totally the same, but in 1980 with the Miracle on Ice and Lake Placid, when the United States with a bunch of amateurs beat the Soviets in a hockey game that 9 out of 10 times the Soviets win that, but the one time the U.S. team did. And I just see there are a lot of intangibles this week. I think that Keegan galvanizing the team, it's going to be hard. The United States has to get to 14.5 out of 28 points to reclaim the Ryder Cup. If it's tied at 14, the team that currently holds the Ryder Cup retains it. So they have to get to 14.5, I think, somehow, some way. And I can't speak to all of the pairings. I don't know, but they're going to play out. I think the U.S. wins this 15-13. I think the crowd plays a massive role in it. I think if I had to speak to this maybe a month ago, I might have felt differently. But once they get on they've gotten on the property, I do think there's intangibles at work. I'll take the U.S. winning this 15-13, and I think there'll be a lot of incredible pride from that, you know, coming out of that video on Monday all the way to Sunday night when Captain Bradley raises the Ryder Cup somehow, some way. And trust me, they're going to have to put their you-know-what off. They're going to have to play incredibly well. But this is a group that I think can do it. Thanks again to David Young. Wishing Cameron all the best this week. And it just doesn't get any better. Enjoy the 3 days of Ryder Cup coverage, NBC Sports, USA Network, and Peacock. It's going to be just the best. It is truly one of the great events in all of sports. And next week, Ann Liguori, who has joined us previously on Musings on Golf, will be with us once again to recap the Ryder Cup. Ann, God, she does a lot of different things in her career. She was the first woman to host a call-in sports show on WFAN in New York. She continues as the golf and tennis correspondent for them. She's covered numerous, many, many Masters, U.S. Opens, PGA Championships, and, of course, Ryder Cups over the years. Ann is on site at Bethpage Black. We're going to have a great discussion, kind of break down the 3 days, break down the week, and get her thoughts on everything that's taking place. So looking forward to having Ann Liguori next week on Musings on Golf. Again, for my fabulous executive producer and dear friend, Jenna Self, Kelly Elvin signing off. Enjoy the 45th Ryder Cup. May the best team win. But I do think it will be the Americans at the end of the week.